the opinions and ideas of the guests of Spooky Things with Sarah and Debbie are not necessarily that of the host or Web Radio Network staff. You're listening to Spooky Things with Sarah and Debbie on the Web Radio Network. And now, Sarah and Debbie.
Hi, everybody. This is Debbie from Shadow Chasers and Hallowed Ground Paranormal Research Council. We're here with another night of fun. Sarah, you there?
I am, sister. I'm here. Good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm not doing too bad. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Is it Friday yet?
No.
No. Doggone it. I was hoping it was going to be Friday.
Wish all you might. It's not Friday.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll hang in there till.
Yeah, we got no choice.
Yep.
Well, interesting thing is I'm driving to work on Friday and the drive shaft fell out of the bottom of my truck. So, hey, you know what? Compared to Friday, this hasn't been a bad day. Oh my
Lord,
God.
Lord. If anything crazy is going to happen, you know, it's going to happen to us, either you or me.
And you know what was funny about that whole thing is that when that happened, it was like still in the morning time, really early. So it was like a spark city when the thing went off and the car behind me goes around me and honks his horn like I didn't know. But I was the first one to know.
Oh, yeah. Man. Well,
yeah, I thought, wow. Well, I hope your drive shaft is out of your car and I can beep it.
I would have just given him the California howdy.
Yes, I know you would have.
Yeah.
That's the way you roll.
That's the way I roll.
Yeah, man. So here we are. We got a great subject tonight, don't we?
Oh, wow. Yes, we do. I was really excited when we chose this subject. I can't wait to get into this tonight.
I know this is good. So the subject tonight, for those of you that don't know, is banshees.
Banshee.
Banshee. And, you know, they got a drink named a screaming banshee. It's pretty good.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I've had one. They're pretty good.
Yeah, they are.
And let me tell you, about one or two of those under your belt, you are a screaming banshee. They're pretty strong.
They are pretty darn strong. You know, and we've heard of banshees since we've been kids, you know, and, yeah. You know, I've never really sat down and really studied the real history behind the banshees. I mean, everybody knows that they scream and that they scare the tar out of people. Nah, it's kind of like an up in the air of like, do they hurt you? What do they do? You know, what really is a banshee other than just scaring the tar out of people?
Right.
And you know what? I found some interesting stuff.
Cool deal. Well, I found a little bit of stuff. Yeah. So maybe what I found will coincide with what you found and give us a lot of really interesting information on the subject matter of banshees tonight.
Subject matter of screaming banshees.
You know, I've been called a screaming banshee before. So when I get on my tirades and I go to fussing and stuff, you know, then yeah, I can be a screaming banshee.
I think any female can relate to that. So.
Yeah, but didn't you say when we were talking earlier today that you found out there is a male version of the screaming banshee?
Yes, there is. It's a rare occasion, but males can actually become a banshee.
Okay. And, well, don't throw us females under the bus too quick.
No, the males, they're, and you know what they're called? A fierce.
A fierce. So, okay.
A female is called a banshee. Ban meaning female.
Right.
And the male is called a fierce. A fierce.
Fierce.
Fear meaning female. Yeah. I thought that was interesting. A fierce.
That is interesting. Well, first of all,
he does about.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, babe.
Oh, they do about the same thing. Go around screaming at everybody.
Isn't that what we men and women are good at doing anyway?
I think it fits right up there in line.
I do.
So, well, you know, it started in Ireland, this whole banshee thing.
Yeah.
And it started a really long time ago. It started like in the, it was like the 6th century, like really a long time ago.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually when they first started, they were not known to be like really super scary or really super, they didn't do mean things. All they basically were was that they were a predictor of death.
Yes.
If somebody in your family was going, it was in the 8th century. It was as a spirit or a ghost of a once living woman. This entity was actually walking on earth at one point as a living woman.
Okay, so
and
it's kind
of
like
she is like the spirit or the ghost of that woman.
Oh wow! So it kind of is like, remember the subject that we had, the topic that night of the Wendigo, because it once was walking the earth, and wasn't it human as well?
Yes.
That's crazy. That kind of coincides with the banshee.
Yes. It does.
Okay.
It does. Now these are going back Gaelic.
Yeah.
And the was Native American. And this is what's also so funny. A lot of these things coincide with one another and from completely different parts of the earth. I mean, this is Gaelic and the Wendigo is Native American.
Mm-hmm.
The Wendigo, mm-hmm. however, has got completely different characters. Basically a banshee is a screaming harbinger of death. They're known for the dramatic screaming and crying and also clapping. So,
also
and I
what?
Thought that was very interesting was that in clapping, as in clapping your hands.
Okay, gotcha. I couldn't hear you. I'm sorry.
Putting your hands together and clapping.
Okay.
Yeah, clapping. So if they do all three of those, they're screaming and crying and clapping. And they're very aggressive. They can be very, very aggressive. It's seen as a terrifying female spirit. It's in Irish mythology. Some of today's pop culture society has weaponized the banshee's screams and made them an object of fear. But the first banshees really weren't even evil or dangerous. It predicted a death in a family. And this is fascinating. A banshee becomes loyal to one family. It's a family of nobility. And basically, it attached itself to a family with like O'Hara. It's got an O in front of it. These are the families of traditional Irish nobility. They have an O in the name, like O'Hara or O'Malley. Or an MC in the name, like McDonald's, you know, or the actual MAC in the name. But it would attach itself, and they're saying that it could be an ancestor of that particular family.
Huh.
But it said that only in that particular banshee will only predict the death of that particular family. And it stays loyal to that family forever.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did not know this about that, but that even if you're, say that there's, we'll say the O'Malleys, okay, and they've got this castle or these really nice noble home. They have a title. Let's say they're barons. You know, who knows? And the years and years and years go by, and the family kind of like just kind of goes its separate ways. As long as that house remains, even a ruin of the house there, the banshee will remain.
Huh.
And it remains to the home. I thought that was very interesting.
So question, even if the family were to die out and the home is vacant, are either parts of the family to be moved or move out of the house, the banshee, does it stay there at that home, or does it go with travel with the family?
Well, I guess it would essentially travel with the family, but it also states that it could remain there. And if it predicts a death of that particular family member, whoever they are, she's going to go off. She's just going to go completely off right there at that house, trying to predict, trying to pre-warn a family member that a death is getting ready to happen in that family.
Wow.
Is very, very loyal to that particular family and only to that family. So, but it wasn't meant for anything else, but other than at that time, just predicting the death. And it actually helps the family to prepare for it. In other words, hey, this is going to happen. You guys get ready for it. Prepare yourself. This is going to happen here. How that whole thing first started too, there's something that's called keening. And that is where in Irish traditions, women were very prominent in dealing with death. They were very, very prominent with that. And they would do what's called keening. And that is mourning and crying and just going out there. And basically they would help family members to grieve and mourn their loved ones by showing them how to mourn and to scream and cry. I don't think I need anybody to teach me that. I'm pretty confident in that.
Yeah, I'm pretty damn good at that myself. I don't need nobody showing me how to do or what to do.
Yeah, if there's one thing I can do, by George, that would be it.
Yeah.
But I mean, they appear in two different ways. The banshee can either appear as a withered, tiny little crone with long white hair, or as a tall, thin, beautiful woman. Those are the two different type of ways it can appear, but they're always wearing white. Hmm. Always wear white. Let me see. Usually what from everything that I've researched is that the banshee becomes a banshee. She's a woman, but she's got a lot of injustices that she feels has been done to her in her life. She's not happy. Something traumatic could have happened. Something just violent had happened to her. She was not happy in life. And what she did is that in all of life that had gone on as being approached, she accepted alcohol, spirit alcohol. And that right there was like a payment for her, that she, this is what she's going to experience being a banshee, because she accepted that. And that you know, that's not a good thing to do. So
if you say so. You gotta think about it. You gotta think about it. Going around and receiving alcohol as a payment, there ain't nothing wrong with that.
Many a woman have done it today.
There you go. Especially if it, especially if it's good alcohol.
Apparently back then they didn't like that.
Yeah.
So, but it's actually, you know, they look at it back then, it was bad or improper.
Well, I just discovered I'm a banshee, though, because you said it was a female that was unhappy or had been hurt a lot in life or, you know, had something traumatic done. So, shoot, I guess I'm a banshee.
You're not a banshee. You're on your way, but you're not a banshee yet.
I'm on
I don't
way.
Know. I suppose if I gave you alcohol.
Well, thanks a lot, sis. You're crazy.
Are you gone?
I'm gone. I'm almost there. I'm gone.
They forever pre-warn the living of death by crying, slapping, screaming. The old Irish word for banshee was, let me see if I can get Beanshee. It wasn't banshee, it was Beanshee.
Okay.
And that directly translates to fairy woman. Some people agree that in folklore, the she originally actually meant other world. So the name actually translates into woman of the other world.
Woman of the other world?
Yep. Banshee actually translates out to woman of the other world.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. And the unique thing about the banshees is that they are only devoted to certain people, which would be the ancient Gaelic nobility. Most often people who had a surname that begins with O, Mac, you know. A different banshee belonged to each noble family member and would forewarn death, sometimes appearing to the family servants. She is said to be an ancestor of the family herself. In many ways, the banshee is a protector of the family and its noble lands, even a symbol of the family. So, you know, going back then, they were very accepted and they were very prized because, you know, every family, oh, we got a banshee. Everybody has a banshee. So if you had a banshee, you were considered nobility because it only was said to be in the service of nobility.
That's
weird. I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
Yeah, I did not.
That's strange.
Yeah. So if any part of the ancestral home is still standing, even if it is a ruin, she will appear. So I guess they can be living in America. And if she knows that one of them is going to die at the ancestral home, she'll start screaming at the ancestral home. So, okay, this is interesting. The banshee legends became less common in the 16th and 17th century, possibly because this is when the British government confiscated Irish land. The English families who moved to Ireland could not have a banshee since they didn't have Irish ancestry, even if they did seize the noble title. So it didn't matter if they moved out onto the lands or anything like that. The only thing the banshee was going to do was still alert from the original families, the Irish families that lived there. And that's why a lot of times they're like without control, because as times have gone on, people have moved, transferred, and other people have moved into those lands, but these banshees are still roaming and they're still screaming and clapping, and they are capable. Some of them are capable of driving people insane. They scream so loud and so terrifying, and they're known to hold on to somebody until they either die or go insane.
Wow.
Yeah, that's scary.
That is scary.
That is scary. Yeah. So they do have the ability to do that. There was a famous author one time, Thomas Crofton Croker, and he wrote a book about the Buntworth Banshee and the McCarthy Banshee in his book of Irish folklore. And in both of the stories, the male heirs of death is preceded by the wailing and clapping of a banshee. So the banshee's appearance warns of an impending death. The expressions of screaming and moaning come from the Irish religion and cultural history. And that's where they talk about women that play a crucial role in the Irish culture of death from the very beginning. Ancient Celtic battle goddess. I'm going to try to get this right. Catabova is also known as they pronounce it Bade. It's a variant of her name that happens to be the Southeastern Irish name for banshee, is basically what it is.
Huh.
And she was not the only influence battles, but she could predict the deaths of the notable warriors in a loud wailing cry. This is interesting. You're going to like this. She could also shapeshift. She had an ability to shapeshift into a crow. And some of the banshees do have that ability to shapeshift. There was another goddess named Bridget who was said to be the first in all of Ireland. She was the first banshee to cry and lament on death. And that was the death of her son, which makes it another connection between women, death, and crying. And this is where the word keening, and that's K-E-E-N-I-N-G, keening. Mm. In Irish tradition, keening is a rhythmic wailing and mourning performed by women as a part of the death ritual. Keening was seen as necessary. It was necessary for the dead to pass safely into the next underworld. So they screened them into the underworld. We'll just scream you in. Yeah.
That's crazy.
That is crazy. Keening women were respected as professionals and performers to guide them through the grief and crying process with, you know, the crying and the singing. They were perceived as being the in-between between the worlds. They were the link with the living world and the afterworld, the other world. Another name for the banshee is Bean Sharp. It is actually pronounced Bonquincha. Bonquincha. I know I'm killing that, but Bonquincha, which is the Gaelic literally meaning teeny woman. Since their actions were seen as necessary, they were allowed to ignore social exclusions while performing. Keening woman might walk barefoot, traveling, not on the roads, but through untamed countryside. They would appear disheveled in torn clothes with unpinned and uncombed hair, you know, like mine is right now. They were outside. I look like that. The physical attributes only serve to emphasize their outwardly responsibilities. Despite the supernatural air surrounding Keening woman, they served a very practical function. And at times of grief, it was like a catharsis. Since they were paid professionals for a time, only wealthy members of society could afford one, excluding those old noble families. Another reason why they're only thought about being around noble families, because they were the only ones who could afford them at the time. Goddesses, keening women, and banshees. It's pretty easy to see that women controlled the voice of death in Ireland. Now, all that being said, there's an interesting theory that is attributed to the banshees. Barn owls. Have you ever heard a barn owl scream?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of scary.
It is scary. I mean, it sounds just like a screaming woman. This is horrible. And we used to have them in our barns, of course. They'd get up there in the barns and they'd scream like that. Barn owls are nocturnal. They only come out at night. Banshees only come out at night. They are not seen during the daytime. They're only seen at night. Barn owls only come out at night. They hunt and they scream only at night. So this could have some kind of a explanation to the banshee myth. But it still doesn't explain the precursor of the death. I mean, people all over the Irish lands talk about the banshees. They heard a banshee that night, and there was a death in the family the very next day. It's very, very popular incident that happens over there. It says that the only power that a banshee actually has is death precognition. It can pass through physical barriers because of the ethereal form that it has. So it can go through walls. It doesn't recognize barriers. It can go through anything. If you see a banshee, it would normally just vanish in a cloud of mist. And the interesting thing is that it creates the sound of a bird flapping its wings when it disappears. They're considered aggressive creatures in dark woods. A banshee cannot be killed by conventional means. In other words, you can't shoot it and kill it. But a banshee can be killed by beheading it. And usually the beheading is by a lead sword. If you have a lead sword, you can kill it. And it's also called, it's something that's called a golden blade can kill a banshee. A banshee can stalk their victims by wailing and screaming until they go insane or dies. It's actually been said that banshees are considered mortal. They are not considered immortal because they can be killed. Now, this is something we were talking about before the show. It said that banshees can fly.
And yeah, you're telling me about that.
Supersonic. Yeah. This is kind of wild. It says that they can fly, but the way that they do it, they don't actually fly per se, but that they scream so loud it creates these supersonic waves, and they actually ride the waves of the sound.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That blows my mind to think about that they could wail that loud and then ride the waves of the vocalization. The yeah. Yeah. Dang. That's weird.
I'm kind of on the wire about that one. I'm like, hey, you know, I've heard some screaming before, but wow, that's pretty loud screaming. Iron can harm, salt repels it. The eyes. They said they have the two eyes, just like humans do, and it sees no better than a human can. It sees in full spectrum, and it has the same color variations of sight as a normal living human being. Interesting.
Okay. But question.
It can understand. Yes.
You said salt repels it, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Now, if a banshee is a precursor or a pre-warner of someone fixing to pass away within the family, why would somebody want to salt it and get it to, you know, go away from them?
Well, the simple reason would be is that that particular family, remember, they're loyal to one particular family. So if just say that an Irish family lived in that house, they started the house. Say I'm living in Ireland and I buy this big, beautiful home. And, you know, nobility used to live in there. And the way that this is supposed to work is that the banshee that was loyal to that particular family would still be there. And if it noticed at any time that there was a death that was coming up to that particular family, then it would appear home and start screaming. Now, they say that it can attack somebody other than who's in that family. So say that you are being, so if you're saying that you want to use the word haunted, if you're being, quote, haunted by a banshee in the house, then to get rid of it, you could use salt to get rid of it.
Okay, got you.
Because from what I'm understanding, the sound of the screaming of the banshee is ear piercing. And it just, it's one of those sounds that just, you know, just feels like you're going to explode your brain by hearing it. It's just so, so horrible and loud and just really, it's not pleasant.
Okay.
But that banshee can, as a banshee, can understand the language that it spoke as a human, but it cannot understand a language that it did not understand as human. So if they're Irish, they wouldn't understand Russian. They would not understand it at all.
We have, I'm getting messages from Sandra Arnold that listens to the show with us. And she said she was hopping in late. So sorry for that, but that she has a very strong Irish heritage.
Oh, okay. What was her last name?
Arnold. It's Sandra. It's one of my good friends.
But is that her maiden name, Arnold?
No, probably married name.
Yeah. So it would be, it would go under her maiden name.
Right, her maiden name.
So it would be her, her maiden family that it would have been attached. Yeah.
More than likely. That would have been the way that worked. Yeah. Okay. Any other interesting things about the banshee?
It's not something I want in my backyard.
No, nor anywhere in my yard or my home. Lord knows I got enough stuff going on in this place as it is. I don't need no banshee, no wailing banshee up in this place.
You know, I always thought that the banshee was a lovelorn woman who had horrible love life and that she screamed for her love. And that's not really what the banshee is.
No. Sandra just come back in and she said that her grandfather was Cronin from County Cork.
Well,
I think Cork, C-O-R-K.
He's got nobility to him.
Yeah.
He probably can see somewhere. I don't know.
I think she's saying something else. Hold on. I have a little bit of Irish in the family, but not as much as I would like, because I love the Irish heritage and the background of the Irish, you know, people. But I have more, of course, you know, because your family with me, we're more Native American than we basically are anything else. But yet we are a big melting pot of different nationalities all in one, you know.
Oh, yeah. Now, kids have a lot of Irish in them from their father's part. Oh, the family.
Okay. That's right. Yeah. I forgot about that. So they do have Irish.
Yeah. Yeah, they got a little bit of it in them.
Yeah, but, Sandra's still typing, so go ahead.
You're writing a book.
Well, that's good. We need interaction with our listeners, so that's good.
Absolutely. Did you get anything different from that?
Let's see. Just a little bit. Hold on. She said my maternal grandmother family was Bahan, I think. B-A-H-A-N, Bahan or something like that. Also Irish. Oh, pronounced Ban. She said she typed slow. No, you're fine, Sandra, if you can hear us. But yeah, so Ban, pronounced Ban, B-A-H-A-N, and it's pronounced Ban. That was her grandmother's family.
Okay.
So I'm not, you know, I'm not real up. I haven't versed myself or seen anything as far as the, you know, the Irish names now, you know, O'Hara's and, you know, the Mac names that she was saying, the MC's and the MAC. I dated a guy one time in high school that his last name was McCafferty. So, and they were of Irish descent, of course, because McCafferty is an Irish name. And that's about as much as I know about Irish naming and stuff like that. But
I've always found the Irish traditions to be so beautiful. I really have. And I've always thought, oh, one day I'd love to go over there because, I mean, Ireland is just, it's just always been a place that I've always found to be so, just so magical, so beautiful. Ireland, Scotland, England, and you know, the whole area, New Zealand, oh God, any of that area, and they're just absolutely, to me, it's just breathtaking. It's so pretty.
Well, that's one of my bucket list places that I'd love to go to is, you know, to see Ireland and, of course, Scotland, Scottish over there. But I know, foolishly, I know I'll never be able to do anything like that. Yeah, Sandra said that would be a dream trip. Yeah, it'd be awesome, Sandra, if, you know, that all of us could manage to go before, you know, we're not here anymore, which, you know, is a bad thing to say, but, you know, we don't have the promise of tomorrow, you know, so we just have to live for today and have that bucket list. You know, my bucket list is a mile long. I have so many things that I would love to do and have never been able to do, but, you know, we can dream big, baby, either dream big or go home.
Or scream like a banshee.
Scream like a banshee, which is what I tend to do around this place here a lot here lately. So yeah, but speaking of when you said that I always thought that a banshee would be like what you said, a lovelorn female, you know, that from her love loss and her love life or whatever turned into a banshee. But you did say in the description of one, it's a female, of course, that is unhappy in life, has had things bad happen to her and had a traumatic life. So I kind of tend to believe that if you throw that mix in there about her forlorn love life, you know, missing love life or whatever, or missing love out of her life or whatever, you know, that kind of mixes in with the whole thing.
Absolutely. That would be a precursor to, you know, somebody just going down that kind of an alley to become a, could very well happen. So right. If somebody was that upset and thought, you know, they're just, you know, we all hear the word, you know, brokenhearted, and, you know, it just, you know, tore them up, and somebody who just can't get over a lost love. that would be a major precursor
True.
to that happen. So wow. I can
see. I got you. I just hit the wrong button. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I hit the wrong button and turned the volume down on you and I couldn't hear you.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. Well, in saying, you know, what you just spoke of, women are extremely emotional creatures. You know that. Every woman walking the face of this planet knows that. And we tend to right. harbor a lot more than what men do. Not saying that men are not emotional creatures, because I'm sure they are. Some maybe more than others, but women, we're I don't know, God, when he created us, he created something extremely special, I believe, because look at everything that we do in life. We're born into this world, we're raised up by our mothers, and we walk this life according to the path that God laid out for us. Things happen to us. We either grow from it or, you know, it destroys us. And I know there have been several things in my past that even to this day, girl, I can't get rid of them. I can't get rid of it. It is there. It's in my heart. It's like it's ingrained in my soul. And we carry as women, we carry a lot of hurt sometimes, and that hurt doesn't go away. And specifically speaking of losing, you know, a baby granddaughter that was only 5 weeks old, that has torn a hole in my heart that will never, never be filled. And so many other things that have happened down through life, which is, you know, we're born and then, you know, it is known unto man once to die. The Bible says that. That's God's word. And we all have to meet our maker and we have to go back from whence we came. But that still doesn't prepare us for losing a loved one, especially a baby. You know, when you lose a baby, either a baby of your own or a baby that is from one of your children, which is a grandchild, that goes against the natural order of things. We're supposed to, you know, live, and then our children are supposed to bury us, not the other way around. You know, we're not supposed to bury our children or our grandchildren. And man, I tell you, life is, I ain't even got a word for life. Life is enjoyable. It's a good journey, but it also has its curveballs, you know, in the game of life that it throws at you. And man, when one of those curveballs comes at you and you're not expecting it, wow, it can definitely take you out of the game for a little while. I was out of the game for a lot of time, for a few years after the baby was taken from us, like she was. And she was only 5 weeks old. And man, I had to come to terms with Jesus on a lot of things. Because I was mad. I was mad at him because that baby, you know, baby should have been given a chance to live and to grow and be a part of our family. And man, I tell you, I don't know. It's a lot. Let's see, Sandra's texting me and she says, yeah, it knocks you for a loop. It sure does, Sandra. Oh God, a girl, it takes the wind out of your sails and takes a lot of digging and crawling back up out of that hole to get back up, to get back into that wind stream again and get your sails going and start flying right again. So I feel like I sort of am a banshee, you know, because of all the wailing and the tears and sorrow and stuff that I've had to go through in my lifetime. And not only me, all of us as individuals. It's life. That's all I got to say. It's just life.
Well, I hear what you're saying. I do. I hear what you're saying. You know, things like this are, I really do think it's got a basis of exactly like what you're talking about. And the heartaches and the trials and the tribulations that people, women, you know, in this particular case especially, what they endure through a lifetime, and it takes a toll.
Yeah.
And I think that's just kind of like the lesson here is that, you know, it does, it takes a toll. And sometimes you can walk away from it for a short period of time, but invariably it catches up.
Yeah. Here's a good tidbit. Our producer Stan with Web Radio is sending me little tidbits here, and he sent me a little thing that said, "Huggin' Molly is considered a banshee," and she was in Abbeville, Alabama, and I believe that that's a restaurant. I know he's making me hungry because it's got an awesome picture of a burger, a cheeseburger, on the thing here, man, and it looks pretty good right about now. But yeah, that's in Abbeville, Alabama.
Oh, okay.
And it's called Huggin' Molly, and it's considered a banshee. I wonder if our famous McGuire's downtown Pensacola has anything of that nature. Because it's Irish. It's an Irish pub.
It's an Irish pub, yeah.
Yeah, Irish eatery, Irish restaurant. Stan said yes. Yes, so possibility. I mean, man, this is stuff that we've not even thought about, you know, as far as exploration or researching, which is pretty cool because we can, you know, take it a little bit further in episodes further down the line as we go.
Absolutely. You know, there are so many things that are out there that, you know, people don't even stop to consider. And, you know, different traditions in different areas, that would be like going over there to visit and not even think about when you're going into these beautiful castles and noble homes, these noble houses. You don't stop to think of what, yeah, you know, think about ghosts and stuff, but you don't think of things that could really be protecting it.
Right.
Like a banshee.
Right.
And what a horrible eye-opener that would be one night, you know? And according to folklore, it's very possible. And people do bring up accounts of banshees, of the screaming and of seeing a woman in white, and she's in the woods, and she just zooms at them, screaming on the top of her lungs, and just clapping her hands, and just, you know, coming after these people, and they're running for their lives. So it's taken on something that is not originally violent or dangerous, so to speak, but as time has gone on, they have become that way.
Right. Well, Sandra just texted again and she said, lost my sister at 2 weeks and little brother at 8. I also had a couple of miscarriages. So I feel for you. That's so sad. I know, Sandra. So sorry to hear all that. And we feel for you too, baby. We understand. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
You don't ever know what burdens other people bear until they sit down and they tell you about it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
People go through life and hide. They hide so much of the pain and the despair that they go through. And then when you sit down and you realize, wow, this person's been through a lot.
Yeah.
You know, you would never have suspected it before.
Well, it's that old saying, you know, well, it's not really an old saying, but people around the world say it, you know, when you meet a stranger, give them your smile if they don't have one, and be kind, because you never know what problems that they're going through, and that smile of yours just might brighten their day.
Right.
So,
most absolutely.
Yeah. But getting back to what you asked me about, did I look up anything or have anything else to go along with the Banshee, what you added, I did see where, if I don't know, I'm not going to be able to actually quote the sentence that I read from it, but it said that Banshees could be different heights, like they would range from, I think, like 4 inches, I think it said, up to maybe 4 foot, depending on the type of banshee that it was. Did you come across anything like that in your research?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I'll have to screenshot it and send it over to you after the show here tonight. But it did say that, you know, most of the time, when described by people who have been visited by the banshee, that it can range in height, and then also in color. A description, one description said that it could be a cloaked figure in a dark cloak with a green, very dark, dark green dress with red glowing eyes. Or it could be in like the one that you did describe, the female in the white flowing dress with the long hair. And most of the time, right, if it's in a white flowing dress, then it has the long red hair, which, you know, well, I started to ask the question, but I just corrected myself. I started to say, why the red hair? But henceforth, the Irish, you know, Irish. Sure. Yeah, Irish, yep, hair, you know, that beautiful red hair that they have. So, yeah. Really something to stop and think about, you know. There's all kinds of things out in this big, crazy, wonderful world of ours that we live in. And everything, things are out there. If you just have an open mind and you want to research it and get to looking into the phenomenon that, undiscovered, I should say, most of the time, you know, phenomenon that's out there.
Well, and the interesting thing also is there, comparison between the banshee and the siren, and there's like, they're all opposites, yeah, of one another. You know, here's the banshee has that horrible shrieking scream,
right,
compared to siren that's got them, you know, beautiful, beautiful singing.
Yes. I'd like to have a show on mermaids and sirens one night, you know, in because there's been so many sightings by people, you know, that they believe that they have seen mermaids. And back in the day, you know, when sailors were on the sea a lot, they told about hearing sirens. And what did sirens do? They sang that beautiful song and beautiful lullaby, and they lured the sailors to their death. So,
right,
talk about creepy. Yeah.
Such a beautiful song, and they're singing it for the sole purpose of ending the life of the person that's hearing it.
Right, right.
You know, that's, and they're saying that the banshee feeds off of these tortured souls, but the siren is the one that actually can bring them towards her, bring them in,
yeah,
for the banshee to get. So it's, yeah, it's kind of, it's almost like talking about a collaboration between the two, that with them being seen together, one a siren and one a banshee, one is the draw that pulls them in, and the other one's the one that finishes them off once that she's brought them in.
Our producer Stan just sent us a really cool link to read up on a legend about hugging Molly. I'm gonna have to read this and I'll send it over to you after the show. But it said, just the first paragraph says that mothers who wanted their children to hurry home at dark would tell their children of a legend, and the legend of hugging Molly. Huh.
Well, tell us what it is.
Okay, well, I'll just go ahead and read a little bit of it. Its origin, it says that the origins of the legend are unclear, but it has become, hold on. I hit the wrong button. The origins of the legend are unclear, but it has become quite the unique story of a town called Abbeville, Alabama. It's said to have been passed down for many generations. The legend claims a phantom woman or a witch-like woman would appear to children who weren't home by dark. Hugging Molly, as they called her, would hug these children tightly and scream into their ears. Well, although Hugging Molly is said to never harm the children, the most damage that is done is said to be done would be the ringing left behind in the child's ear after the piercing scream. Okay, the appearance of Hugging Molly would be described as a woman who stood, 7 feet tall and engulfed in clothing with a wide-brimmed hat. And how she came to be, there are multiple versions of how Hugging Molly came to be. Hold on. One states that Molly was the ghost of a woman who had lost her infant and had dealt with the pain by hugging local children. Another states that Molly was a professor at the Southwest Alabama Agriculture School and that she was trying to keep students safe by keeping them off of the streets at night. Oh my God. And here's a picture of her, and Lord have mercy. If I seen that thing at dark, I would die of a heart attack.
We'll see.
I'll have to send it over to you after. Girl, you don't want me to disconnect the radio show. Remember, I am electronically challenged. But I'll send it over to you after.
All right.
But that's pretty cool. That's thank you, Stan, and appreciate you sending that over to us. That's some pretty cool information right there. Yeah, I'm gonna look into that some more. That's pretty cool. But see, just one more point that there are all kinds of legends out there. You know, urban legends or whatever, you know, if you're inquisitive about things of this nature, that's what this show is about. And that's what we're trying to bring to you to get you thinking and get you to, you know, looking for things. And, you know, it's pretty cool. Okay. He said he sent it to you too, Debbie. Thank you, Stan. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's pretty cool. Where'd you go, Deb?
Oh, sorry about that.
there you is. But it's been very but it's been very interesting tonight, to say the least, and a topic that I would love to pursue in another show down the road. What do you think?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I was fascinated by the collaboration between the siren and the banshee.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I was fascinated about that, about the siren drawing them in and then the banshee finishing them off. You know, that the siren had brought in. And Sanders, it's like one is all.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Sanders,
no, I was just saying that.
Are you going to go or am I going to go?
Go ahead. I'll be quiet.
Sandra just sent a message to us. She said she loves the show. Always interesting. And thank you, Sandra. We appreciate it.
Yeah, that's nice. Thank you very much.
Okay. Now, what was you going to say, sis?
I don't know. I
forgot. No, you didn't.
If I don't ride that train right immediately, it passes me.
Girl. Well,
that's something. You know what? Talking about mermaids, did you see that one show? This is back years ago, where they had, it was like an underwater drill or something like that, I guess. And they kept getting these reports on this mermaid kind of thing down there. And
I did.
Yeah. And it did show something coming up to the window and putting its hand up on the window.
Yeah, I saw that. I thought that was so interesting. And I don't know, I had mixed feelings about it. I kind of believed it, kind of wanted to believe it because of everything I've ever read on sightings of mermaids and stuff like that. But then again, something came up in, not the news, but I don't even know if it was on, if I Googled it or if I seen it on Facebook. Of course, you can believe everything that's on Facebook, right? But it said that it was all faked, that it was for TV and entertainment purposes. So I don't know. I mean, look at Google, go to YouTube and pull up all the videos and stuff about mermaids and stuff like that on YouTube and judge for yourself. I mean, how are people, I don't know. Y'all just blew my brain. You just blew my mind because I don't know. We'll leave that for another discussion another time.
Yeah, I found it to be totally fascinating. I really did. I guess even whether it was even created or if it was true, to me, it didn't even matter. It just got me thinking about it.
Right.
Just made me think about it.
Yeah, me too.
And because it was giving a different side. It wasn't this beautiful woman that you were looking at. It was not that at all. As a matter of fact, it was a bit on the grotesque side, but it really would have looked like what they would have really looked like as a mermaid.
Right. Well, do you know, if you remember, I don't know if you've Googled it or if you've seen it on TV, many, many years ago when P.T. Barnum from Barnum and Bailey Circus first started out in his oddities that he used to carry around with him that he had collected, that he swore that it was, and there was a specific name for it, Bimini Mermaid, Bimini Island Mermaid, or something like that. I can't remember, but it was part fish, of course, from the waist down, and then from the waist up, it resembled to be human or somewhat of that. But when all actuality years later, after, you know, Barnum and Bailey and all that folded in and everything, I don't know where the piece went, but I think a university got a hold of it and started doing research on it and testing and stuff. And I think they proved that the top part of it, the bottom part was that actually of a fish that they had somewhat melded together to the top part of, guess what? A monkey carcass.
A monkey.
Yeah. So it was half monkey and half fish, but yet Barnum had it in his trove of oddities and he was going around selling it off, selling tickets and making money off of it as a real live mermaid. So it goes back a long way.
Yeah, I remember. I thought it was weird then.
Yeah. Weird then, weird now.
And you see a lot of these professional mermaids, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I do envy them, though, because I love the water. Being born and raised along the Gulf Coast here in Pensacola Beach area, our waters are just so beautiful, so inviting. The emerald green and the dark blues and stuff as it graduates towards the shore where it turns into, you know, being clear. It has an allure all its own. That's why it attracts so many tourists down through the summer and spring parts of the year. But I've always wanted to be able to swim in the depths like that and just encase myself or enclose myself around with the water and just be at one with the fish and stuff like that. But girl, I can't swim a lick. I would drown. But I do respect and admire, and I'm jelly over the professional mermaids that we have, the beautiful women that are out there that are posing as mermaids at some of our sea aquariums and around the world like that, and exhibits for everybody to see. But yeah, swimming with the dolphins is one thing I'd love to do. But I'm scared of sharks. Scared of sharks. And I won't get above my ankles in the water when I go to the beach. That's strange, huh? Love the water, want to be in it, but I'm so scared of it, I don't want to be in it.
Yeah. It doesn't really bother me.
Oh, I know, because look at you. You have worked with dolphins. You have worked with killer whales. You have worked with all kinds of the amazing ocean creatures, you know, sea creatures that I envy you on that, because those mammals are magnificent. God's creatures that
are
just beautiful creations, of course. Of course, you didn't have that good of an experience with the one killer whale. But,
beautiful. I never took away the magic, just the majesticness of the animal himself. I mean, he was actually a pretty good boy. He was frustrated. That's what it came down to, was frustration. And there was a particular thing that he just couldn't get right, and he was getting frustrated, and he acted out in frustration.
Yeah.
I never blamed him. He's an animal. And
being in that small... Take a minute and tell our listeners what actually happened to you.
What's that? I did.
No, you didn't tell him how. I'll tell them how he took you down.
Oh yeah, he just grabbed me by my legs, grabbed me by my and pulled me down to the bottom of the tank, and thought it was great watching me bob back up. As soon as I get back up to the surface, he pulled me back down again. And it was great fun for him. And it was terrifying. As soon as I get up to the surface, he's yanking me back down. And, it made me realize. Well, actually, that's not what made me realize. I knew it from way before. When you take an animal that's wild like that, and large, very large, it's not accommodating. Those tanks are nowhere accommodating for these animals. I have yet to see a seaquarium or aquarium of any kind that is adequate for the care of an animal that size. They've yet to make one. These animals just are constantly moving. They're constantly on the move. And to take them away from their pods, which are their families, there's such a complex pod family unit. And to take them away, it's like taking a 4-year-old away from his mother. and never returning him.
Yeah, well, I'm claustrophobic anyway, and can you imagine a whale of that size being enclosed in the tank structure that they are? Those poor babies. I feel so sorry for them, you know?
Yeah. It's cruelty at its highest. It really is, you know, for the sake of putting on a show like that. It's just, what are they really going to learn? I mean, yeah, you can learn anatomy. You can learn, you know, physiological changes with it. You can learn things like that. But as far as real socializations and interactions, what you're going to get is a stressed out animal who's reacting to things that it's in fear of, anxiety, but you're not going to get that true characteristic of the animal that's in the wild.
Right.
You know, it's impossible. You can't do it. What are you going to learn? What are you going to really learn from that?
And they are encaptured for what? For mankind's
entertainment.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you. Yeah.
I don't care what other label that they put on it. I've been there. I've worked in it. I've seen it from the inside. The bottom line is the bottom dollar that they're pulling in. And that's what they're doing. That they're gaining money.
Yeah.
These animals are being worked like that for the money that they're bringing in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of these places do conservation things that, you know, rehabilitation and release. How many times do you see the release?
I don't remember seeing any release. Yeah.
Yeah. These animals go into these tanks and they don't come out. They're there.
That's what I was thinking.
They stay there.
Yeah. Yeah. They do come out, but they come out at their expense. They lose their lives. They die in the tank and come out, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a shame. It really is. But they're doing a lot of they got a lot of headway going with it now as far as the release programs. Unfortunately, a lot of the animals don't make it. Even when they get to the point of being released, they don't do well out in the wild. They're so institutionalized, you know, with where they've been all those years. It's hard for them to be able to recoup back that sense of the wild again.
And
it plays a big part in early.
They lose a lot of their natural instinct.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, when they're captured and put into captivity for, you know, the aquariums and whatnot, they lose a lot of their natural instincts.
Well, they lose a lot of it because they also, they're a lot of times not permitted to reestablish themselves within their original family pods. And that's where the security and the really total social interaction comes in from, is their family pods. And
right.
They won't be accepted into another pod, especially the male. And a lot of times the females as well. But the original family pod, when they've been gone for that long, a lot of times will not accept them back into the pod. And that's where their strength is, being together in their pods. So, I mean, it's a real sad situation.
Yeah,
but I'm just really glad that the tides are turning, and you know, there's a lot of stuff that's being put a stop to, and it's the beginning of a good change. It's the beginning of better things to come for these places and these animals. It's coming along.
It is. It is. Well, sis, I thank you for bringing the topic of Banshee to the table tonight. It's been really interesting.
I've really enjoyed this tonight.
Yeah, I thought it was time that we go into more of a out there kind of a subject that, you know, you don't hear of a lot. You don't hear about the Banshees a lot. And right. these are a lot of the things bring more to the front, you know, things that aren't talked about quite so much. Unusual.
Definitely.
And if somebody out there can think of something that's unusual that you would like to know more about, we'll be happy to do the research and bring it to you. Let us know. Let us know. What about this? Or what about, you know, whatever. We'll Definitely. Research it. We'll find it. And we'll bring it to you as best as we can. We enjoy doing that. I just love learning about the new things, you know, new things about things, especially something that you've got like an idea. Like when we were talking about the last time about the Wendigos. I can never say them right.
Right.
they were actually different than what I really had thought that they were. And when I really did my research on them, it was like, wow, that's not what I remember them as being.
Yeah.
And it was enjoyable to me learning more about them just so that we could present it, you know, to all you guys out there. And we really learned a lot.
Yeah, we're learning right along with the listeners as well. Cryptozoology and all the things that we are you know, leaping out into, we haven't really dove down into all that stuff to really give it a good look-see, you know, because we've been too involved with paranormal. We've been involved with the ghost hunts and investigations and stuff. So this is new and exciting to me and Debbie as well. So we're right along with you guys for this ride. And it's a good ride.
Yeah. And, you know, we're still going to be doing, you know, as far as ghost hunting and stuff like that, you know, that's something that we're always going to do. We're not going to be as much as many locations as we were before. We've got other things that like we're branching out with too. So,
Oh, and by the way, sis, with you mentioning that reminded me, I did get a text and a call from Steven. That was on our team, and he has a case that he needs us to look at. So I'll let you know as the other info comes in. I'll let you know.
Is he going to do it with us?
No. And you know the reasons why on that. So
I do.
Yeah,
I do.
Of a personal nature.
If it's from Stephen, I'll do anything I can to help out, you know.
That's what I told him. I said, we're not really pushing in that direction anymore, but I said, because it's you, brother, I said, we'll definitely talk to the person and see how we can help, so.
Most absolutely. Oh, and I did want to bring this up to you all, so remember that case went on over here?
Yes.
The one couple weeks ago that went on?
Yeah.
Came
back. I knew it was coming.
We came back. It apparently just went into hiding for about 3, maybe 4 days.
Yep.
And it's starting up again with the wrapping. And seems to have changed location.
Okay.
So, and I know exactly why it changed location. I'm hip to it. I know what's going on with it. And if you want to, you might want to, we'll talk about it. Maybe you coming over here and we'll go in there together.
Sure.
And see
if we can.
Because, you know, we're real strong together. So there's another one right there for us. So as you guys can see, this is what we do. You know, we bring cases to the table that we've either done or that we're looking into or that we're thinking about doing. And we get together and we go at it. We just, that's what we do. And we help out as much as we can. This case that I was involved with involved three little girls. And this is their house. And I want them to live in a house that they don't have to be afraid to go to sleep in. And it's frightening them. So that's totally, that just does not work with me. Does not right. work with me.
No. So we'll get together and talk it over, and then I'll make a decision, you know, what weekend's best, where I can come up and just get there with you, and we'll go handle it. We ain't scared.
We're not scared.
Nope. We ain't scared.
No, so. Unless it's something in the corner screaming at me.
Oh, girl, I'm a banshee myself. Like I told you, I ain't scared of no wailing banshee. Bring it on, Cletus.
I don't like something screaming at me. Like,
hey, I'm scream louder. I used to be a singer in rock and roll bands in my day, remember?
Yes, I remember our days in being younger. Yes, that's right, everybody. We used to be a lot younger. I know it's hard to envision, but we were a lot younger at one point.
And Stan, if you can hear us, please, dear. Hold on, Deb. I'm sorry. Stan, if you can hear us, need to look at your schedule so we can get you guys up to the Hotel de Funiac as well, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, we need to do that. And,
yeah,
we got a lot of things that we still got on the line.
Yeah, we do. A lot of irons that we got in the fire that we need to stoke very carefully, and then pick out which one that we want to tackle first, and then get it done, put it in the water to cool, and go on to the next one, you know. So
yeah. And you guys know you always go with us wherever we go.
Yeah,
we take it all with us. So, you know, it's like, come on, we're going here.
Yeah. Well, before we do sign off for the night, I always want to, you know, say thank you, listeners, for following us. And we hope, we hope that you are enjoying the show, and that the information that we're bringing to you is informative to you and that you find it interesting. And as always, we want to thank Web Radio, our producer, and his lovely wife, Teresa. And it's Stan and Teresa Fikes. And follow them on Web Paranormal, and also listen to them on the Web Radio, and listen to us on iHeart, Spotify, Spreaker, and just stay in tune with us. And also, please don't forget, we did not announce it tonight, but we would love to, before we go, to announce the Paracomic-Con in Ozark, Alabama, and August the 19th and the 20th this year. So you don't want to miss that, guys. It's going to be a lot of fun and a lot of informative stuff and some cool things. And you're going to meet a lot of cool people. And of course, Stan and his group will be there, and you'll meet us and a lot of other individuals there as well. So y'all, please mark it down on your calendars and make a point to come see us.
Absolutely. It's going to be so much fun.
It is. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to be back to the grind of tomorrow. We
go back. Don't you have to remind me?
I know. I know. We got to do it. Got to be paid.
Sandra sent a last message, and she said, love y'all and your interaction. Thank you, Sandra. We appreciate it, honey.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to be signing off and saying it's work tomorrow. Yes. Got to go to work.
Yes.
So it was good to see you, Sarah.
Good to see you too, Deb. I know you guys in Radio Land can't see us, but Deb and I have a
a little video thing here where she and I can see each other so we can kind of interact with each other. But thank y'all for listening in. We appreciate each and every one of you. God bless y'all. I hope you have a good rest of the week and an even better weekend. Plan something fun to do. If it's gorgeous weather out there, get outside, take your family outside somewhere. Have a good time. Life is short, y'all. Okay?
Absolutely. We love you.
We love y'all too. All right. Love you, Deb. Love you, Stan. Thank y'all so much. Love you, listeners. See you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye.